Chapter 004. I snapped back into consciousness. It honestly felt as though I had been reborn. Or rather, as if I had been revived.
Oh! It was all a dream!
I tried and yelled. Of course, it wasn't a dream. If it had been a dream, I'd have come to in my room. But this was not my room. In fact, it was a place I'd never seen before. My little sisters, who woke me up every morning, were not there either. Still, I wanted to try going back to sleep again and again until I finally got the it-was-all-a-dream ending. What was this place? An abandoned building? I knew I was inside some sort of man-made structure, but thick boards had been nailed across the windows to shut them tight, and all the fluorescent lights hanging from the ceiling had been shattered, without exception. I turned my attention to my posture. I seemed to be lying down. The floor was made of linoleum, but was horribly cracked. I moved just my head around to get a good look at my surroundings. What was that thing on the wall? A blackboard? And desks? Seats? A classroom? So this was a school, but it couldn't be Naoetsu High. I could tell that much. And it didn't really feel like a school. I was, after all, a high school student. Though it wasn't my school, I could at least tell if I was actually in one regardless of all the trappings. What was it, then? What kind of place other than a school had a blackboard and tons of desks and chairs? Then I understood. The atmosphere. It was a cram school. This had to be a cram school building. But, judging by how the place looked, it couldn't be in use? The windows, the lights, maybe it had gone bankrupt? Or did it just look that way because it was so dim in... Wait, dim? Why was I in a room with blocked windows that not a single beam of light seemed to enter, able to see so clearly? I could tell it was dark. It definitely didn't seem bright. I shouldn't have been able to see the tip of my own nose, it was that dark. But I could see. I could see clearly. But maybe there was nothing to it? Were my senses a little confused because I'd just woken up? Wondering, I raised my body. Ow! I'd bitten the inside of my mouth. Huh? Wait, were my canines always this long? I stuck a finger inside my mouth to see what was going on. And, moving my arm in order to move my finger, I realized, only then, that my splayed arm was being used as a pillow by a little sleeping girl. What? A little girl? What? Indeed, a little girl. She seemed to be about, 10 years old? A blonde girl wearing a fluffy dress that matched her. Her skin so far beyond white that it seemed translucent. Exhaling tiny breaths, she was fast asleep. All of it was baffling. Why was I there? Where was I? And who exactly was this blonde girl? Not a single thing made sense. But I was certain that I was in a bad spot. That she was a little girl wasn't bad on its own. But when you start talking about unfamiliar little girls, things really start to sound criminal. Hey, wake up! I tried shaking the safest spots on the blonde girl's body that I could think of, like her upper arm. When I did, the blonde girl began to groan with apparent displeasure.
Just 5 more minutes.
Such a scripted reply, little blonde girl. She turned in her sleep, as if she was annoyed.
Come on! I said wake up!
I continued to shake the blonde girl's body, paying no mind to her reaction.
Just X more minutes.
How much longer is that?
4.6 billion years or so?
That'd be enough time for another Earth!
As soon as I yelled my retort at her, I put my hands to my mouth in a hurry. Right. Come to think of it, if I did wake her up, wouldn't I be worse off? Clearly, searching for a solution on my own was the best course of action. Of course, speaking of solutions, I didn't even know what my problem was. I decided to start off by looking at the wristwatch on my left arm. Let's see. The time was 4:30. No good. I couldn't tell whether it was morning or evening for my wristwatch. I searched around for my phone, and found it. The time on the screen stated that it was actually 16:32. The date was... March 28th? I thought back to the last time I checked my phone for the same reason, and back then, the date had just changed. And hadn't it become March 26th? 2 whole days had gone by? No. Even if it wasn't a dream, how much of that was true, I wondered. That. Those memories. How accurate were they? I gently pulled my arm from under the girl's head, careful not to wake her. My first goal seemed to be to figure out where I was. Sneaking, I headed toward the door of the room. Classroom? Which was unlocked. Well, it was more like it was off one of its hinges, making it a very shabby excuse for a door. This dispelled my fear that I was being imprisoned in a mysterious facility. It may seem ridiculous, but I was actually quite worried about that possibility. Sure, a cute little blonde girl, but what gain could there possibly be in kidnapping me? As I exited the door, I immediately noticed the stairs. A marker by the floor read 2F. The second floor? There were stairs leading both up and down. I thought for a moment about which to take. But the common sense choice was the first floor. First and foremost, I had to get out of the building. On the other side of the stairs was what appeared to be an elevator. But I didn't have to approach it to know that it didn't work. I climbed down the stairs. Okay, Hanekawa's number and email address is in my phone's contacts list, so I did run into her after the closing ceremony. And my memories before that must be fine, too. So those panties were no dream, even if it was like a dream. I have less money in my wallet, and I have a receipt, so I definitely bought those youth-oriented magazines on women's fashion, too. Though my memories were slightly altered, I pretended not to notice and continued. But what happened after that just doesn't seem like it could be real, even if it wasn't all a dream. Maybe I'd misrecognized what had happened. For example, there was an injured woman who had been hit by a car, and I was so surprised when I saw her that I passed out on the spot? It was a bit of a stretch, but I had to start somewhere. After that, someone carried me here when I fainted, and... Nope. No imaginative tinkering could make sense of it. You'd just call an ambulance. But the time displayed on my cell phone had to be real. Crap. I hadn't been home for 2 days, and it would feel to them like 3. While it wasn't my first time staying out overnight without permission, 3 days was stretching it. Compared to my little sister's wild behavior, 3 days out seemed altogether cute, but I needed to at least call home as soon as possible. At that point, I was still entertaining such optimistic thoughts. The moment I stepped outside of the building, they were dashed. Avoiding rubble and metal and glass fragments and junk like strange signs, cans, and even cardboard boxes strewn about my feet. But really, why was I able to see so well in the dark? I exited into an audaciously overgrown field of grass. And it happened as soon as I left the building. My body. My body from head to toe. Burst into flames. I should have known. Why, despite it being late enough to call evening, the sun seemed so incredibly bright. But it was already too late. My body was on fire. My shriek didn't even sound like a voice. Pain wasn't the word. My hair, my skin, my flesh, my bones, all of me was on fire. I was combusting at an incredible speed. Vampires, creatures of darkness, are weak to the sun, And that's why they don't have shadows. But what does that have to do with
me? You fool!
The voice echoed from inside the building as I rolled on the ground, making full use of any and all knowledge I possessed about flames engulfing my body. I recalled reading somewhere that doing this would work. I looked, with blazing eyes that didn't have an ounce of moisture left. Looked in the direction of the voice, and there found the blonde girl who had been asleep until just moments ago. With a domineering glare that hardly suited a little girl, she yelled,
"Get thee here at once!"
It was well and good for her to say that, but the pain was so extreme that my body wasn't behaving as I wanted it to. And the blonde girl must have seen this, because she braced and leapt out of the building. No sooner than she did, her body burst into flames. But she seemed to not even mind, and running to my side and holding me up by my armpit, she began to drag me right along the ground. All as her body was covered in flames. She dragged me right along the ground. She didn't seem to be all that strong. Her strength was that of a regular child. She deserved some praise given how slender her arms were, but they weren't strong enough to hold me up. All she could do was drag me. Drag me, with her body in blazes. It was quite a feat to muster that much strength while on fire. But it took the girl a fair amount of time to drag me back into the building. Or in other words, into the shade, where the sun's rays didn't reach. But what really surprised me was what happened next. My body. The moment we entered the shade, the flames that engulfed both my body and the blonde girl's disappeared, as if by magic. And that wasn't all. Our bodies didn't even have burns on them, despite those raging fires. Our clothes weren't even scorched. Not my hoodie, not my camouflage pants. In fact, they didn't seem so much as frayed. Likewise, for the blonde girl's fluffy dress.
What?
Honestly?
The blonde girl responded to my confusion.
What sort of dunce runs out under the sun with no warning? I take my eyes off thee for a moment and look at what ye do. Have ye a death wish? Any average vampire would have evaporated in the blink of an eye.
What?
Never go into the daylight again. With thy immortality turned to a curse, ye'll be stuck in an eternal loop. Burn, recover. Burn, recover. Thy powers of recovery exhausting themselves, or the sun setting. Whichever comes first, ye'd live through hell. If an undead vampire could be said to live.
What? A vampire?
So, it really wasn't a dream or some misunderstanding.
You mean, you're...
Blonde hair, dress, and those cold eyes. No, I thought, there was a huge age difference. While it may have been hard for me to make an accurate guess because the woman I'd encountered was fighting off death, I'd still say she looked, 27 or so? She was clearly different from this 10 or so year old girl. Plus her limbs. Her right arm, her left arm, her right leg, her left leg. The blonde girl had them all. A 10-year-old girl's limbs, straight and thin. She was clearly different from that limbless woman. But they had some traits in common. The white fangs I saw inside her mouth every time she spoke, for example. She nodded, her attitude utterly domineering and proud.
Indeed I am Kishat Acerola Orion Heart Underblade. You may call me Heart Underblade.
She followed this up with a terrifying statement.
400 years have passed since I last created a thrall, and this was but my second time. Yet it seems to have went well, judging by those regenerative powers. No sign of going into a frenzy either. You spent quite some time asleep. I was beginning to worry.
Thrall?
Indeed. And as a result, Eve... Now that I think of it, I've yet to hear thy name. But what difference does that make? Thy past name henceforth has no meaning to thee. Be that as it may, servant.
She laughed. It was a gruesome laughter.
Welcome to the world of the night!
And so, that is how I, Koyomi Araragi, after 17 years and change, met my abrupt, unannounced, and unexpected end. Or should have, but didn't. In a sense, though, my life really had come to an end. No wonder it had felt like I'd been reborn. Because I'd literally come back to life. A vampire. A vein long since mined dry, whether in manga, movies, or games. One of those notions we now consider dated twice over. But despite that, and despite being a high school student, I was fairly ignorant when it came to vampires. Or rather, I didn't know anything about them. The extent of my knowledge was that they're blood-sucking demons that don't like the sun and don't cast shadows. And even that I'd only recalled while talking to Hanekawa. What else, I thought. Oh yeah, did they hate garlic? I wasn't sure. Which is why I didn't know that when a vampire sucks someone's blood, that person turns into a vampire. Having your blood sucked makes you one of them. Having your blood sucked makes you a thrall. I hadn't known that I'd be forced to quit being human. One of them. A thrall. I'd assumed the result would be death. That was the logical outcome of giving away all of the blood in your body. And I had offered her my neck ready to die. But this? I was hardly prepared to be a vampire. But there was no point in saying so now. No point in crying over sucked blood. I'd been wrung dry of blood by her, and preposterously had become a vampire. There was no need for me to prove it to myself. My body burst into flames under the sun. My body recovered in moments despite having burst into flames. My eyes could see well in the dark, and the canines in my mouth. Fangs. Clear evidence. Proof enough. There was no need for me to search in vain for my shadow. Where am I? However, I, Koyomi Araragi, loser and chicken, not wanting to face the truth, started off with a softball question. Second floor. The two of us had returned together to the room where I regained consciousness. I seemed to be right about it being an abandoned building of some sort, at least, but the only room across all four of its floors where the windows were closed off with thick boards, in other words, where sunlight wouldn't come in, was this one. Yeah. Even if I was able to regenerate, I still wanted to avoid going up in flames. What was the word she used again? Evaporate? The vampire began, flipping back her blonde hair.
They call it a cram school, though it seems to have gone out of business a number of years ago. Now it's nothing more than an abandoned building, convenient for concealing ourselves as we have been.
Huh. So it really was a cram school. And I was right about it being abandoned, too. But concealing ourselves? Get off it. That made it sound like we were in hiding. She'd chosen a place out of the public sight just so she could watch over me while I was unconscious, right? Okay, Kisshot. My next question is...
Stop!
She, Kisshot, interrupted.
I said to call me Heart Underblade.
But that's way too long. Heart Underblade? I feel like I'm going to bite my tongue twice just saying it. You don't want to mess up saying someone's name, right? Kisshot is shorter and easier to say. Or am I not supposed to call you that? Kisshot started to say something but shook her head. Her golden hair floated quietly through the air.
If ye be fine with it, then tis fine. I have no reason to deny thee.
What an odd way of putting it. Oh, but if it wasn't a Japanese name, then was Kisshot her first name? In that case, it'd be weird if I suddenly started calling her that. But did such common sense rules of human conduct apply to vampires?
And what is thy next question?
I've been turned into a vampire, yes? This second question was the one I wanted to ask her the most. Loser and chicken? Well, it was the kind that someone who didn't want to face reality would ask. And as such, fell in the softball category too. I didn't have to ask her to know the answer.
But of course,
she stated.
There's no need for me to spell it out to thee now, is there? Ye have become my thrall and my servant. Consider it an honor.
Your servant. She called me that earlier, too. A servant. Strangely enough, the thought didn't bother me. So why do you look like a child now? Last night, 2 nights before yesterday, when I met you, you were more, you know, grown up and...
Excuse me for being childish.
No, that's not what I mean. More grown up, and with all of her limbs severed. That's what I wanted to say.
I wrung thee dry to the last drop, even so.
She bared her fangs at me, and laughed. What she was saying was no laughing matter, but she laughed nonetheless.
Yet that was still not nearly enough, which is why I've taken on an appropriate form. 'Tis better than dying, though I'm only able to sustain the bare minimum of immortality. Most all of my powers as a vampire have been curtailed. Such an inconvenience.
Still, 'tis better than dying, she repeated. She didn't want to die, she said. The image of her crying and sobbing floated through my mind. There wasn't a single trace of it in the way she spoke now. It was then that I realized, long after the fact, that I really did save this woman. I'd saved a vampire, tossing away my own life.
As thou can see, I was able to regenerate my limbs, at least in form. There's no meat in them, but they will suffice for the time being. But let me make our relationship clear for thee, servant. Though I may have taken on this guise, I am a vampire who has lived through 500 years. Not to mention our master and servant relationship. In truth, I am not one to be addressed as an equal by a newly born vampire such as thee.
Oh?
What a vague reply. Do ye understand me?
Well, yeah.
Then as proof of thy submission to me, stroke my head!
She said domineeringly. I stroked her head. Sheesh, I thought. Her hair's so soft. There was so much of it, but it was like my fingers were gliding across it.
Good enough.
This is proof of my submission?
Do ye not even know that?
She said haughtily. It seemed as though vampires operated under different rules.
How ignorant. But ignorant as thou may be, I am glad to have a pliant servant. A good master attracts good servants. However, servant...
Kishot continued, glaring at me with her cold eyes.
Ye saved my life. Saved it, even as I appeared in that unsightly manner to thee. Which is why I am of a mind to grant thee special permission to address me in that uncouth tone, and to slur me by calling me Kishot.
Slur you? Had I basically called her by her first name after all? I felt like I'd really messed up. But I couldn't call her something else now. Not after all that. Still, Kishot had said another thing that bothered me.
As thou can see, I was able to regenerate my limbs. At least in form.
It was true. While her petite, slender body was a 10-year-old girl's, Kishot did now have her arms and legs. At least in form? They had no... meat in them?
And... I suspect that I will have to rely on thee in the days to come.
Huh? What was that supposed to mean? That didn't just bother me. It wholly preoccupied me. And that means...
But don't get carried away, my servant. A servant attends to his mistress as a matter of course. If I command thee to stroke my head, ye shall faithfully stroke it, no matter the time or place. Understand?
She said, puffing out her chest with pride. Well, I say that, but she had a 10-year-old's body, which meant she had no chest to speak of. It was more like a child trying to stand her tallest. Though, of course, the phrase puffing your chest out doesn't include emphasizing your breast size as a nuance. Then again, no. It seemed pointless to tease her about it. I couldn't see her giving me a proper reply either. I'd rib her about that later. I needed to get around to asking her the one thing I wanted to know the most. I lobbed a lead-in question. Why did you... turn me into a vampire?
Hmm?
I was ready for you to suck me dry. For you to kill me. I'd even seen my life flashing before my eyes. I'd seen face after face. Well, just four. Or wait, had it been five? I had a hard time remembering.
It's not as if it was intentional. One whose blood is sucked by a vampire is turned into a vampire, without exception. There was nothing more to it.
Oh, I see. If I had known that, would I have offered her my neck? I'd been ready to be sucked dry. I'd been ready to be killed, too. But had I been ready to quit being human?
Well, it's quite convenient for me. Guess why?
Kishot drew out her paws and went on in the same arrogant tone as ever.
It is because there is something thou must do for me.
You said something about having to rely on me.
To rely on thee in the days to come. Yes. My body could only recover to this point with thy blood alone. I am far from my full power. Going forward, thou must act for me.
Going forward?
Indeed. I always act looking two steps ahead. For that is what makes me the iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire, Kishot Acerola Orion Heart Underblade.
What a long slogan. How many characters long was that when you added in her name? Plus, only the cold-blooded part made sense. What are you going to make me do? I almost asked her the question, but that would derail the conversation. If Kishot was going to try to make me do something, then that was quite worthy of discussion. But first, there was something I needed to ask. I had the answer to my lead-in question, so I asked her the one thing I wanted to know, more than any other. Can I... I began, making up my mind and looking straight at her to show that I had the resolve, depending on her answer. Can I ever become human again? That was all. Kishot didn't respond in any of the ways I expected her to. I was sure she'd be mad, or bemused, or perplexed. But all she did was nod, almost like she understood.
I thought so.
She even said that. My predictions had been off, but it seemed as though hers had been spot on. Even the fact that I'd ask, it was as if she knew all along.
I understand how ye feel.
You do? A greater existence. Those were Hanikawa's words. But judging by Kishot's tone, I was certain that she ranked humans below vampires such as herself. For her, humans were lesser beings. In that case, why wasn't I happy to have become a vampire? Why would I ever want to go back to being human? I thought she'd reply along those lines, but...
Of course I understand,
Kishot said casually.
I was once invited to become a god, but I declined.
A god?
'Twas a long time ago.
In any case, she said, sounding more interested in changing the subject than getting our conversation back on track.
I understand. Not so much wanting to go back to being human, but wishing to remain as one is. I thought thou might ask for that. While I did say, welcome to the world of the night, I did not expect thee to wish to stay.
I see. I began before realizing something. I hadn't gotten a reply yet. And so... can I...
Sure.
Kishot said, her voice a notch lowered. Her eyes were still as cold as ever. I might even say her gaze was piercing.
Sure ye can.
Despite that gaze, she declared with certainty that I'd be able to turn back.
I give thee my assurance, upon my name. But naturally, my servant, to do so thou must do a few things for me. I need not hesitate to issue orders to my servant. Let's not think of them as orders, but as a threat. If it is thy wish to turn back into a human, obey me.
And then, naturally, she let out a gruesome laugh. Chapter 005. Dramaturgy. Episode. Guillotine Cutter. Those were the names of the trio who robbed Kishot of her parts, or so she said. While Kishot told me about each of them and their traits, words didn't seem adequate to the task. It was like she was explaining in a foreign language, so my mental image of all three of them was fuzzy. But the most important point about them was beyond easy to understand. The man named Dramaturgy, her right leg. The man named Episode, her left leg. The man named Guillotine Cutter, both of her arms. They had taken her limbs, which was why she'd been on the verge of death. In fact, Kishot wasn't just on the verge. She would have surely died if she hadn't sucked my blood. Despite being immortal, she would have died, and she understood that better than anyone else. She'd resigned herself at that moment. Though she narrowly escaped barely alive from the trio, escaping was all she could do. Why? As she explained this to me, I couldn't stop myself from interrupting her. Why would they steal your arms and legs?
I am a vampire. Ye humans. Well, not thee, but humans call those like me monsters.
Kishot said matter-of-factly.
It is only right for monsters to be exterminated. Those three specialize in slaying vampires. It is those bastards' profession to kill me. You've at least heard of the existence of those who specialize in eliminating those like myself, have ye not?
I guessed so. They were discussed hand in hand with vampires. My memory was fuzzy, and it wasn't like I knew all that much to begin with, but I had at least heard of them. So they slew you?
Don't be a fool. I haven't been slain yet. But having my limbs stolen hurts. I've nearly none of my regenerative power left, and in my current state, I can hardly fight.
I see.
Which is why,
Kishot went on, as if stating an obvious conclusion.
Ye shall contend against the three and simply return to me my limbs.
Huh? I was dumbstruck. Simply?
Well, though I cannot provide thee with details at the moment, in order to turn thee back into a human, I must be at my full power, in full form, so to speak. And for that, I absolutely require those limbs.
But me? Fight? It's totally not my thing, you know? I hadn't done anything wrong, but I started to sound like I might have. I guess my reflexes aren't terrible, but they're not great. And you can see how I'm built. I've never been in a fight before. Oh, and wouldn't they just try to slay me too? I too, for the time being, was a vampire. The chances were high. After all, I would be up against a trio whose specialty was slaying vampires. Even if they let me off the hook because I was a former human, why would they simply hand back the limbs they'd won in battle?
Fool! That was when ye were human!
Kishot said, appalled.
As my thrall, and now that I am at my weakest, it would be simple for thee even to slay me.
Are you weak for a vampire, or what?
Nonsense!
I got scolded. Basically, she was a scold, this one.
How can thou reach such a conclusion from what I've said? I'll have thee know that I sit among the top rank of vampires. They call me the Aberration Slayer.
The Aberration Slayer. If that was supposed to sound fearsome, I wasn't, you know, feeling it. To begin with, what was an aberration? Was it like a yokai? Whatever. Even if I'm stronger than you in your weakened form, even if I am, those three were able to take your limbs from you when you were at your full strength, right? Your full form? In that case...
I slipped up only because there were three of them. I'd made light of them and was completely unprepared. I'd presumed I could take even three of their ilk together.
Huh.
In short, faced one at a time.
Kishot said, overbearingly.
They pose no problem for thee. To put it plainly, 'tis an easy job, and a cheap price to pay for turning back into a human.
It wasn't as though her vague reassurances had persuaded me, but that was how I ended up walking around town at night. It was a while after the sun had set that I was finally able to leave that abandoned cram school and grasp exactly where I was. The place's coordinates were on the outskirts of my already provincial town. In fact, I'd had no idea that such a building, some bankrupt cram school, even existed out there. I imagined that it was forced out of business when one of those major cram school chains decided to open up in front of the station. While it was perfect as a hiding spot, I was amazed that Kishot had found it. I'd already called home. Fortunately, it was my little sister, the older one, who picked up. I asked her to tell the others that her big bro was using spring break to go on a journey of self-discovery. She seemed to buy it. But didn't that mean she saw me as the kind of older brother who was at risk of setting out on a journey of self-discovery at any moment? Kind of pathetic. Immediately afterward, I received a text from the younger of my two little sisters. Both of them were still in middle school and weren't allowed cell phones. She'd sent the message from the computer in our living room.
Dear Big Brother, I know that, at times, we all have to lose our way. But when you have a moment to reflect, try to remember. Where was it that Mytel and Tiltil found the Bluebird of Happiness?
Chastised by my little sister. I was honestly upset when I realized that I'd wasted some of my phone's battery on receiving the message. I did have to recharge my phone somewhere. I couldn't just go home and pick up my charger, and maybe I needed to buy a new one at a convenience store. Since there was no way the electricity was turned on in the remains of that cram school, a battery-powered one. Of course, it wouldn't have to come to that if I wrapped it up before my battery died. No problem for me? They aren't my problem, okay? I should have told her they're her problem. But maybe it was an easy job after all? While I didn't fully believe her at first, it did seem as though my abilities as a vampire were the real deal. But explaining how I tested them might be incriminating. In light of laws against the destruction of property, permit me to remain silent. Hey, if a building is abandoned, then a little damage here or there... you get the idea. At any rate, I feel like we're overlooking something, I'd said. Kishut's words had left me wondering. That, plus the fact that the whole exchange had proceeded at such a clip. So, where are these three?
I haven't a clue.
You haven't a clue.
Thy concerns are unneeded and uncalled for. Walk around at random, and they shall find thee. These are professional vampire hunters, remember. Finding vampires is what they do.
Oh, yeah?
Aye. They should pose no problems while we rest easy in here. But if we walk outside at night, when our vampiric powers thrive, they will surely come buzzing like insects to a lamp. They must be roaming this town at this very moment, searching for me. With any luck, it will be settled tonight.
Kishot had let out a disconcerting laugh. Well, not having to look for them was neat. Because how would I even do that? I had nothing, least of all personal connections. No way. Still, that conversation proceeding at a good clip didn't sit right with me. Shouldn't I be questioning a whole number of things, even if it was a hard fact that I'd become a vampire? For example, I leapt straight on it when she said it, but would I really be able to turn back into a human again? What proof did I have that Kishot wasn't lying? She could be using me in order to recover her arms and legs. Feeding on me hadn't been enough, so she was literally using me as her right-hand man. Not to mention her other limbs. No, Kishot was clear from the beginning. These weren't orders. They were a threat. She would be relying on me. But if I got nothing in return, there was no way I'd agree to help her. And to get me to, she lied, and said she could turn me back into a human. Was that it? Luring me, with a lie. I wanted to become human again, and Kishot had predicted that from the beginning. No. If I was her servant, she didn't need to do anything so convoluted. She could order me, right? No. In her current state, she had lost most of her skills as a vampire. So maybe she had to lie to keep me under her command? That actually made sense. While she did look to be about 10 now, with that 10-year-old's body of hers, when I recalled her original visage, she seemed to be quite intelligent. At the very least, if she'd spoken truly, she'd lived for 500 years. She couldn't be dim. And anyway, it felt like I hadn't asked the most basic question of all. It was as if I'd been so caught up in becoming human again that I was neglecting a crucial point. I hadn't asked why Kisha was even here in Japan, and moreover, in such a provincial town to begin with. Yokai really didn't seem to be the right word. But in any case, vampires were Western monsters, right? As for the three guys, hadn't Kishot essentially brought them to Japan? Whatever the case, all I had were guesses. Whether or not Kishot was scheming, I had no choice at the moment but to believe her, to cling to her words. It was she who had grasped the initiative, without question. First, I would get her limbs back. We could talk after that. Her story may have been made up of whole cloth, but she couldn't have been lying about the vampire-slaying specialists, too. And it was then, as I was doing as Kishot had told me to, trudging along a sidewalk-less street as bait, that I came across a fork in the road. And it happened. I had to wonder, for someone who had lived for 500 years, could that vampire called Kishot Aserora Orion Heart Underblade actually be pretty dim?
Faced one at a time, they pose no problem for thee.
Or so she declared. But where did that premise come from? She was the one who lost because there were three of them. Her own words. Far from proceeding at a good clip. What an idiot I was. But it was too late. Or, in a way, maybe I had realized just in time? I did envision that very situation a second before it occurred. With any luck, it will be settled tonight. That was what Kishot had said, but without any... It would also be settled tonight. With me dying for a second time. What am I supposed to do? First, from ahead and to the right, a massive man who looked over 7 feet tall was walking my way. A greatsword with a wavy blade in each hand. They talk about a mountain of a man, and I could see his powerful frame all but bursting through his clothes. I could have used each leg of the jeans he wore as a sleeping bag, and you could have made 5 of my shirts from the material it took to make his. As if to hold back his unkempt hair, left to grow for God knows how long, he wore a hairband above his forehead. A grim expression on his face, his mouth shut and perfectly straight, this man slinging 2 wavy greatswords who seemed to be made of pure muscle, glared at me. He looked exactly as he'd been described to me. That man was Dramaturgy, the man who took Kishot's right leg from her. And ahead, from the left, a man was closing in on me who seemed to cut a slim figure, and not just in comparison to Dramaturgy. There was still some youth left in his face, but there was nothing innocent about the look he gave me. While it's a common saying, if looks could kill, I'd have died then and there. That was how sharp his sanpaku eyes were. He wore a white traditional school uniform, which, depending on your perspective, really did make him appear young. But the gigantic cross he balanced on his shoulder with one arm did much to dispel that impression. It looked like someone had taken one of those plain crosses you wore as an accessory and multiplied its size 50-fold. A lump of silver, the cross was comically large, about 3 times the size of the man, and probably his own weight cubed. It wasn't a stretch to imagine that the cross was used not as an instrument of worship, but in combat. The man seemed to look straight through me, and even appeared to have a slight grin on his face. And together, with that gigantic cross on his shoulder, he approached me. He looked exactly as he'd been described to me. That man was Episode, the man who took Kishot's left leg from her.
What should I...
Then, from behind, I didn't know since when, but a man wearing priestly robes who looked almost docile, at least compared to the 2 to my front, was following me. His hair brought to mind a hedgehog, but that was the only part of him that signaled danger. and his demeanor seemed downright peaceful. I couldn't tell what lay hidden in his eyes, so narrow that I could barely tell whether they were open or shut. And at the very least, unlike the other two, he had nothing, be it greatsword or cross, that smacked of a weapon. But that seemed to be the most notable aspect of this priestly man of all, for despite his appearance, he'd taken twice as many parts from Kishot as the other two. The priestly man, with his unassuming face and empty hands, closed in on me at a natural pace. He looked exactly as he'd been described to me. That man was Guillotine Cutter. The man who took Kishot's right and left arms, both of them, from her.
Heck, there isn't anything I could do!
Experts at slaying vampires. Dramaturgy. Episode. Guillotine Cutter. The three men were converging on me. It was as if the forked road had been placed there for this exact moment. There was nowhere to run. I was a trapped rat.
What, for real? Gotta love it.
The first to speak was the man shouldering the gigantic cross, Episode. True to his appearance, his speech was a jumble.
Man, it isn't hard underblade. Who is this guy?
So replied the hulking man, Dramaturgy, to Episode, ignoring me though I was caught between the two. His tone seemed stern and wholly solemn, but I wasn't able to make out his words. While it surely wasn't out of consideration for me, the priestly man to my back, Guillotine Cutter, said,
Now, Mr. Dramaturgy.
His voice was gentle.
Speak the language of the land you're in. That should go without saying.
I made to look behind me, then realized that would mean turning my back on Dramaturgy and Episode. I was unable to move. Guillotine Cutter, like the other two, paid me little heed and continued.
But it does seem to be the case, Mr. Dramaturgy. I dare say, no, I'm certain, that this young man must be Miss Hart Underblade's thrall.
Seriously?
Muttered Episode, his displeasure evident.
I thought that vampire had a notion about not creating thralls.
She did create just one in the past, I've been told.
The rat! Perhaps we drove her to have no other choice but to create an underling to act as her arms and legs,
Dramaturgy said, now in Japanese, with his body that looked like a mound of muscle. I'd assumed he was a meathead, but he hit the mark when it came to what I was.
Are you telling me?
Episode said, the grin still on his face, the giant cross swaying on his shoulder.
The whereabouts of Hart Underblade, which we've had so much trouble ferreting out, what with her faded presence, is something we can just beat out of this kid's body?
That would seem to be the case.
Guillotine Cutter callously seconded Episode's menacing words, and Dramaturgy joined them with hopeful ones of his own.
We'd better receive a separate bounty for slaying this boy in addition to Hart Underblade.
What had I been expecting? Overlook me because I was a former human, after all. How could I ever think that?
It went beyond wishful thinking. From the outset, they were treating me like I was nothing, ignoring me the whole while. They didn't recognize me as a living thing. My very existence seemed to count for nothing. It was Guillotine Cutter who said,
What to do? It will take a bit of work if we're to take Episode's suggestion and learn Miss Hart Underblade's whereabouts from this boy.
I got this. Whoever smelt it, dealt it.
Episode said, laughing.
I'll kill him without doing any permanent damage.
No, let me.
Dramaturgy chimed in.
I'm the most suitable one for tasks like these. I get along best with vampires.
I don't particularly mind doing it either.
Guillotine Cutter put himself forward too, albeit in a modest manner.
The two of you must be tired.
Don't be talking crap!
Gathering up my courage, I yelled. Not to any one of the three in particular. Avoiding eye contact, I yelled.
You guys try to talk things out with me or something! Don't be going straight into how you'll put me down! I'm a human, okay? Are you going to murder a human?
While it was only for a moment, they went silent. It made me think my words must have gotten across to them. But that was all. While my words may have gotten across, their meaning didn't. None of them attempted to respond to me.
Why don't we do this the usual way?
Dramaturgy said.
Okay, so first takes it?
Episode said.
Very well. Fair competition provides a chance for all of us to hone our skills.
Guillotine Cutter said. And then, nearly simultaneously, the three vampire hunters leapt towards me where I stood in the center of the forked road. It was probably only thanks to my vampire eyesight that I saw their movements. Not only could I see through darkness, my eyes had incredible dynamic vision. But what good was being able to see them? What could I possibly do? The course of action I took was, in most likelihood, the most idiotic one conceivable. That's to say, holding my head in my hands, I curled my back and crouched down to the ground. I ditched offense, but nor was this defense. My stance was an attempt to escape reality. It was impossible. Of course it was. What was I even thinking? I wasn't the protagonist of some manga or movie or game. I was a mere high school student, so why was I out trying to fight vampire hunters? What was this? Some super-powered school action series? Of course I couldn't win. So what if I'd been able to punch through a concrete wall? So what if I was able to jump high and move fast? What good would those powers do me? Like I said, I'd never even been in a fight before. I had no one to fight with. I didn't know any martial arts or anything. God damn it. I'd already thrown my life away, given it to Kisshot. So then, why was I clinging to it so dearly now? Yet, no matter how much time went by, no matter how long I waited, none of the three began to rain down attacks on me. What now? Were they going to toy with me? Or was I so pathetic that they were stunned? Did I kill the mood by... No, of course not. They weren't going to toy with me. I barely registered as there in their eyes. Which is why I lifted my face, buried in my knees, and peeked up. And then... I heard an easygoing laugh.
You're in the dead center of a residential area, and yet you'd swing swords and hammer down with a cross and say menacing things? You three sure are spirited.
Catching both of Dramaturgy's wavy greatswords, one between the index and middle fingers, the other between the ring finger and the pinky of his right hand, receiving Episode's gigantic cross with the sole of his right foot, like it was all in a day's work. Suppressing Guillotine Cutter's nimble move with an outstretched left hand, without even touching. Who was he? Some older guy just passing by. Still standing on one foot, he asked.
Something good happened to you three?
Chapter 006. Meimei Oshino. That was the name given by the dude passing by. I thought it was a ridiculous name, but there was no way I could tell him that. What with him saving my life? Even if he did seem sketchy. Even if he was wearing a psychedelic Hawaiian shirt. He had saved my life, so I shouldn't say such things. But what a sleazy-looking dude! Oshino? I didn't know whether to call him Mr. Oshino, and if I should be more polite in general. I may have owed him my life, but I had no idea who or what he was, so I wasn't stooping to stooping. Friend or foe? Even if he'd saved me, I wasn't sure yet. Though I'm sure stooping to stooping is an odd turn of phrase. Nonetheless, I did express my gratitude. Thanks, you saved me.
No need for thanks. You saved yourself, Araragi.
Oshino said nonchalantly. He didn't seem to be taking this very seriously. In fact, neither did those three. As soon as Oshino got in the way of their initial attacks, all three quickly turned back the way they came, as though they decided to beforehand. They had disappeared before I knew it, without so much as a parting threat. While I wasn't able to fulfill my goal of recovering Kisshot's limbs, my life did seem to be intact. Just as long as this Hawaiian-shirted man, Meimei Oshino, wasn't my enemy. Or Kisshot Asarura Ori on hard underblades.
Still, Koyomi Araragi. The name fits you. Nice and dramatic. But those three really don't pause to think, do they? No one with ordinary nerves would get down to it right here without putting up a barrier first. They must really be going places. Oh, don't be so guarded, Araragi. Your eyes are glaring. So spirited. Something good happened to you today?
As Oshino said this, he pulled a cigarette out from the chest pocket of his Hawaiian shirt and stuck it in his mouth. I was convinced that he'd come up with a lighter next, but he didn't, simply leaving the cigarette there unlit.
Anyway, Araragi, let's go home for now.
Home?
That abandoned cram school.
He said it like it was nothing, then began to walk. I reflexively called out to his back. Hold on a minute! How do you know?
Huh? Why wouldn't I? I was the one who told that girl about the place.
The guy let drop incredible stuff like it was normal. What? True, I'd wondered how Kisshot had been able to find such a place, but he was the one who told her?
Well, I was merely doing the right thing. That girl, Hard Underblade, seemed to be in quite a bit of trouble dragging your body around. So I told her about a good spot.
Do you and Kisshot know each other? Rather than respond to my question, Oshino squinted at me as if my very choice of words was dubious. What is it? I asked.
Nothing. So you call her Kisshot?
Huh? Yeah.
As you heard with those three, most call her Hard Underblade. But I guess you don't, Araragi.
Yeah, it's too long, isn't it? What was this about? It bugged me. It's not like there's a correct way to refer to her, is there?
Well, you're right. And if she made you her thrall, then I guess it's not too strange. Regardless of what regular vampires may do, she, Hard Underblade, is a legendary vampire. The Aberration Slayer. The iron-blooded, hot-blooded, yet cold-blooded vampire.
Vampire. So you know. On further thought, it was awfully late of me to be saying this. It was clear from how he'd appeared out of nowhere and easily blocked the trio's attacks. Who are you?
Me? At times a mysterious vagabond. At times a mysterious traveler. At times a mysterious wanderer. At times a mysterious troubadour. And at times a mysterious nomad of the high sort.
Mysterious all the way through.
A lot of times a chorus of a woman's lowest vocal range.
A lot... altogether alto?
All two.
You didn't think this out, did you? Oshino shrugged in a display of irresponsibility and said, coolly,
I'm just a dude passing by.
Yep, he was sleazy.
That's how it was today. And the other day, too. I was just passing by when I saw Hard Underblade in trouble. Don't worry, I'm not an expert at slaying vampires or anything.
Could I believe him? No, that wasn't it. I could only believe him. I had no choice.
Though I'm no amateur, my specialty is broader. People have me do a wide variety of things, but introductions can wait until later. Let's go back for now, Araragi.
In the end, I did as Oshino said. I went back to the abandoned cram school with him. There was still technically a possibility that he'd turn out to be a vampire-slaying expert who was after Kisshot. To say the least, however, he knew about the cram school Kisshot was hiding out in and could have gone straight there instead of wandering the streets. That is, if he were an expert vampire slayer working separately from the three. Slaying her couldn't be hard then, given Kisshot Asarura Ori on Hard Underblade's weakened state. When I looked at it that way, Oshino was no simple enemy. Though he didn't seem like a simple ally either.
Oh, you're back!
Oshino and I wasted time on pointless chat, truly pointless, like about old anime. The conversation made me certain that friend or foe, I didn't need to use honorifics with him. And after about an hour's walk, we arrived at the abandoned school. Once we reached its second floor, Kishot was there to greet me with a big smile on her face, as if she was eagerly awaiting my return. Ah, the woman hadn't realized her strategic blunder yet. Awkward.
Hmm? Who is that behind thee? I do seem to recall his face.
I can't believe you. Is that all I am to you?
Oshino chuckled.
I'm the one who told you about this secret base in the first place, Heart Underblade. My little aberration slayer.
Ah, right. From then.
Kishot nodded. It didn't seem to be a lie after all. Oshino really had met her that night. So it could be true as well that she learned about this abandoned building from him.
And?
She asked, cutting off the conversation with Oshino as if she was completely uninterested in him, and addressing me. Again, all that hope in her eyes. It made her harder to blame. I want you to calm down and listen, okay? Subtlety had never been one of my strong points, nor am I any good at euphemisms. As someone who's avoided relationships with others since entering high school, my ability to carry a conversation is unusually poor. Anyway, how Dramaturgy, Episode, and Guillotine Cutter, all three, ended up attacking me at the same time. How I wasn't able to recover her limbs as a result. And how Oshino got me out of a tight spot. I frankly explained it all to her. By the by, Oshino took that time to gather all the school desks in order to make what appeared to be a bed. Was he planning to sleep there or what? How carefree could you get? Kishot listened to the end, but didn't seem particularly let down. I'd almost forgotten. It was easy to get confused by her 10-year-old appearance. But in fact, she was far more grown up than me. She wouldn't just throw a tantrum. Even if she was, maybe, dim.
What a predicament. So, those three still act as a unit, do they? Now that they have me cornered, I was sure they would separate and engage in some free competition.
So you did have a plan?
They seem utterly determined to destroy me. What ridiculous obstinacy. Haven't they damaged me enough already?
They were talking about a bounty or something.
I see. That was how this age operates. Of course. How heartless.
Kishot said. She snickered, apparently remembering something.
I can't allow myself to be this addled. Perhaps it's due to the time difference.
You sound like a frequent flyer or something. Oh, right. I could use the opportunity to ask her. I had been so busy caring about myself that I'd forgotten. Kishot, why are you in Japan in the first place? And in this town in the middle of nowhere, too?
For a spot of tourism. I want to see Mount Fuji, the Golden Pavilion and whatnot.
She said it awfully casually. I thought there was no way she could be telling the truth. How is our town going to greet weirdos who brandish deadly weapons in public that she might end up bringing with her on such a visit? Not to mention that neither Mount Fuji nor the Golden Pavilion was anywhere near our town. But on the flip side, it was hard to follow up on a lie that blatant. You're not plotting to take over Japan or something, are you? I said just to make sure before continuing. Whatever. In any case, those three working together took you down even when you were in full power mode, right? Then how am I, your thrall, supposed to be able to beat them?
As I said, face them one at a time.
I can't do that if they're working together. You said we'd be fine as long as we laid low, but there's no telling when they'll find this.
That's not a problem.
Oshino suddenly interrupted me. When I looked over, he was lying down on top of a makeshift bed he had finished building. There was such a thing as being too free-spirited.
I quietly went ahead and placed a barrier here while you two were asleep.
A barrier? He had used the term earlier, too. But what was it supposed to mean? Like a force field or something?
Well, something like that.
His tone made it clear that it totally wasn't, and he only agreed because explaining it would be too much work.
And it'd be a different story if they had an amazing sense of the territory. But those three foreigners won't be finding us here.
Listen, you, I said, making my suspicions clear. What are you planning?
What am I planning?
He said, laughing frivolously. So sleazy. How old was he anyway? He had to be over 30, but... was I too doomed to turn out like him after living for 30 years? Didn't people all become proper adults past 30? Why are you helping Kisshot? And me? I'm starting to understand that you're not an enemy, even though I can't see you as an ally.
What a terrible thing to say.
Oshino finally took out the cigarette he'd had in his mouth the entire time and returned it to his pocket.
But like I was trying to tell you, I'm not out to help you two. There's no reason or need for me to help you. It's not even a matter of friend or foe. If it's a help, then you went and helped yourself.
I have no idea what you're saying.
What I'm trying to do is balance things out.
Oshino said something more like it at last.
You could call that my job. An intermediary between here and there. But,
he continued,
vampires may be a bit of a nuisance. They're too powerful, even for that side. Not only that, I have the Aberration Slayer on my hands. Hearing you talk about this, Hadaragi, you seem to be implying that those three attacking her all at once was a cowardly act. But that's not the case at all. That's what the girl, Heart Underblade there, is worthy of.
Such praising words. You make me blush,
Kisshot said, puffing out her chest, the one thing that was pointless to puff out. It didn't seem like praise to me, but I decided I'd ignore that. The question now was finding out who Oshino truly was. Now introduce yourself. You said you would.
Meimei Oshino. A free spirit with no permanent address,
he said.
Well, you can just think of me as an authority on yokai and the like. Though, unlike those three, I'm not particularly good at slaying yokai.
Not particularly good?
To be a little more honest, I don't like it.
But it's your specialty?
Balancing things is my specialty. Like I said, standing in between and finding a happy middle ground. If you had to, you could call me a negotiator.
A negotiator? An intermediary between here and there? Where was here, and where was there? Here being humans and there being monsters? But in that case, which side was I on now?
Monsters. I like it. Though I call them aberrations.
Aberrations.
And that girl there is known as the Aberration Slayer. You get what that means? She's the rare kind of vampire able to drain the energy from aberrations. And that's why the kid's famous.
I'll have thee know that I do not choose to be famous,
Kisshot said, sulkily this time. 10 is a pretty difficult age, I began to think, but remembered that she wasn't as young as she looked. They say not to judge people by their appearances, but getting used to this would take time. Another reason I hoped she'd return to full power mode soon.
Do not presume to know me, boy,
Kisshot said to Oshino. Calling that dude boy? Though if she really was 500 years old, it wasn't exactly wrong. In fact, it was Oshino calling her kid and girl that was endlessly disrespectful. But Oshino didn't seem to give a damn, and apparently not minding being called boy in turn, he replied.
You're right, Heart Underblade. I shouldn't judge others based on rumors, whether they're human or not. But listening to a bit of your exchange just now, the two of you seem to be in a pretty tight spot. I never would have expected complications.
There isn't a thing complicated about it. In fact, 'tis quite simple.
Maybe if you looked at it from a vampire's lifespan. But it spells trouble for humans like us, right, Araragi?
Wait. Wow. This guy understood the situation, yet spoke like I was human, like I belonged to this side.
What's the matter? Why that reaction? You want to return to being human, don't you, Araragi? Am I wrong?
Well, I do, but...
If you want to stay human, then you're human,
Oshino added.
Basically speaking.
Then he looked at Kisshot next with a sidelong glance.
And Hard Underblade, I'm pleased. You made Araragi your thrall, but you do intend to turn him back into a human.
While Oshino seemed to be offering Kisshot unqualified praise this time, she responded with a pout.
Negotiator, or whatever thou might be, do not speak when it is not thy place to do so, boy. I have never liked busybodies.
Busybody? Oh, I'm anything but. Honestly, I'm the introverted type. But that doesn't matter. I don't mean to be a busybody, but...
Meimei Oshino said, still lying down, his posture sapping all credibility from his words.
If you'd like, I don't mind interceding.
Interceding? Between here and there? Between us and those three?
Who else?
Oshino nodded.
Honestly, I think that showing you this ruined cram school plus constructing the barrier was more than enough. But maybe we're tied by some kind of fate.
So you'll save us?
I'm not going to save you. Just lending you a helping hand,
he said.
The balance still seems a little off as things are. Like you're being bullied. As I said earlier, I don't really like the kind of slaying that they do.
Does that mean you're on our side?
Again, no. I'm not a friend. And I'm not an enemy,
Oshino said. He was neutral.
I said I'd intercede, right? In other words, I'll stand in between. What happens after that is up to you. I'm not the one who's going to act. When life gives you the boot, you're the one who has to pull yourself up by its straps. I don't get involved in causes or results. All I do is tinker with the process in between.
I looked at Kisshot, but she seemed just as dumbfounded by Oshino. What was with this guy? Aloofly and airily, he'd managed this situation?
Oh, but of course this is my job, so I wouldn't do it for free. After all, I'm a wanderer going from journey to journey. You don't want to run out of change on the road. Say, how does 2 million yen or so sound?
2 million? I shrieked. Meanwhile, Oshino remained calm.
You can pay me when you have it. I won't ever bother you for the money. But I need to at least charge that much, or else it won't all balance out.
But... I had no choice but to believe him. Even so, could I really believe him? This passerby dude? Between telling Kisshot about this abandoned cram school and saving me from those three, putting the stuff about the barrier aside... He did seem to have done enough to earn our trust. Still, something about him just seemed shady.
Tell us your exact plan.
It was Kisshot who, unlike a kid with only 17 years of time on this planet such as myself, demanded the particulars.
Ye speak of negotiation, but it could not be easy. There is no way to persuade those three. Given thy position as a neutral party, I cannot expect thee to return to me my limbs, can I?
Well, I couldn't do that much. I'd be a busybody. I haven't thought much about a plan either.
Oshino said. As deflating as this was, it inspired more confidence in me than any talk that proceeded at a good clip. Because the guy seemed relaxed about this.
All I can do is bow my head and ask them nicely. In good faith, too. If they don't listen, I'll have to fall back on dangerous ideas. But if we're lucky and they do, the game will be on.
The game, you say?
But the first order of business would be to split up those three. They pose no problem faced one at a time. Isn't that your take on it, Hard Underblade? Then we just need to make that happen.
Oshino said, as if it were the most reasonable thing in the world.
It will require taking on a little bit... Well, quite a lot of risk on your parts. But go along with that for me.
I've been prepared to do such from the start. Ye can count on our resolve. Mine, of course, as well as my servants.
She'd gone and resolved for me too. Hey, that's my resolve.
Still, boy, how do ye plan on negotiating with those three?
Like I said, I'll bow my head and ask nicely. Those three seem like the type you can talk to.
Oshino replied with what sounded like a joke. Those three who didn't listen to a word I said were, of all things, the type you can talk to? Just how much of a pacifist was this guy?
The details are a trade secret, but I'll ready the battleground. Then, Araragi, you will get Heart Underblade's limbs back from them. If you recover all four, Heart Underblade regains her power, and you go right back to being human.
Recover, huh? In the end, I had to handle the hard part. They posed no problem faced one at a time. But we were talking about those three. Dramaturgy, Episode, Guillotine Cutter. Wavy dual-wielded greatswords, a giant cross, an unfathomable man. Honestly, I didn't feel like I could win. It was something I had to do, since it was for my own sake, but I wouldn't be able to challenge them completely unprepared like I had that evening. Then again, for the entire day, I'd done way too little thinking. I'd pretended to be calm when I was actually flustered. Not just me. Kisshaw, too. So if I was going to go fight them again, we needed some sort of measure.
My servant,
Kisshaw said to me. What, Kisshaw?
I can't provide human currency. I'm unsure of how much of a debt 2 million yen is, but is it a sum ye could take on? Worry not. The boy's skills are real, even if we ignore the fact that he taught us of this place and that he rescued thee. I can tell that much even in my weakened state.
But he's neither an enemy nor a friend. He's neutral.
I'd never any expectations for an ally. And if he, privy as he is to my current location, were foe, then we are done for. There's no use worrying over it. If he says that he is a neutral party, then we shall not wish for more.
Oh. That was one way to look at it. A reasoned, or rather, a harsh view. And furthermore, while there was no point in my saying so outright, it wasn't as if we'd been in any worse of a position if Oshino's negotiations failed. It wasn't just her eyes that were cold then. In that case, there was only one question left unanswered. The passerby dude. Just passing by. But the question was, did Oshino really happen to pass by? He was there when Kisshaw was at a loss as to where to go, and he was there when I was being attacked. Wasn't that a little too much to call a coincidence? Even if it was intentional, it didn't change a thing, and I didn't think Oshino had anything to gain by it. But passing by that often? Yet, maybe that was it. Observing a coincidence that had come to be, I was perhaps ascribing motive after the fact. Going down the same line of thought, even my encounter with Hanikawa, who left the school gates the afternoon after closing ceremonies while I was wandering around near school, seemed not to be a mere coincidence. Come to think of it, if I hadn't run into her, I wouldn't have snuck out of the house that night to go to the bookstore, which is to say I wouldn't have run into Kisshaw. Or was I beginning to overthink it? Maybe I needed to call it all a lucky coincidence and be done with it, for the time being. Then again, lucky definitely wasn't a word I wanted to apply to encountering such a sleazy dude. I absolutely don't like saying this about my savior, but to be frank, he's the sort that I'm least comfortable around. Even so, I made up my mind and said, I don't have that kind of money saved up. But if I can pay you when I have it, and you won't bother me for it, and if you also don't need any guarantor or collateral, I'll take it on. There was nothing else I could do. It was heartbreaking to have to take on a debt at my young age, but desperate times called for desperate measures.
All right, deal! Thanks for your business, as they say.
Oshino cried, his tone cheerful to the point of being off.
Oh, and I'll be staying overnight here starting today. Hope I'm not too much of a nuisance. Well, actually, I'd had my eye on this place ever since coming to this town. I had to do the right thing and let Heart Underblade have it, but there really is no better abandoned building in town. So what now? Want to form a huddle to psych us up for tomorrow and what it'll bring?
Oshino said this in a most unpsyched posture, still lying down. And of course, neither Kisshaw nor I took him up. Once again, midnight had come and gone without my noticing. It was now March 29th. Speaking of tomorrow, today was already tomorrow.